Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. February is here, and that means it's Choose Love Awareness Month. So we're going to check in with Scarlett Lewis about recent developments with her Choose Love movement and the global expansion of important and effective programming in schools, businesses, communities, and beyond that was inspired after losing her son in the Sandy Hook tragedy of 2012. Then we're going to hit the road with Bike Walk Connecticut to discuss how this nonprofit is changing the culture of transportation through advocacy and education to make bicycling and walking safer, more feasible, and attractive for a healthier, cleaner Connecticut and all our communities. Then we're going to close with the first of a two-part chat with the award-winning CEO of Connecticut Housing Partners to hear about how this nonprofit has been working for over 30 years to end housing insecurity, address income inequality, and prevent homelessness by creating and preserving safe, affordable workforce housing and resident services for people across the state. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. Homes for the Brave, in partnership with the University of Bridgeport's Fones School of Dental Hygiene, is offering free oral screenings and oral care and health presentations at the Homes for the Brave Annex in downtown Bridgeport. These events are slated for February 7th, March 7th, and April 11th at this Homes for the Brave Annex at 1 Lafayette Circle. These events are open to the public and no appointments are necessary, and they encourage members of the community to take advantage of this opportunity. If you'd like to learn more about this and other services, just go to homesforthebrave.org. Well, whether visiting her at her home in Sandy Hook, Connecticut, or we're talking on the phone or we're meeting somewhere in the middle, it's always a bittersweet conversation to talk to Scarlett Lewis, because she and I became acquainted, sadly, as a result of the loss of her son, Jesse, who was murdered during the Sandy Hook Elementary School tragedy. Scarlett and I have known each other now for these 10 years since that horrific day. Scarlett, thank you so much for being part of the program and really for showing the world how the worst possible tragedy for a parent can end up really, you're spreading these beautiful seeds of love. And here we are in February, the first weekend of February, and February is Choose Love Awareness Month as a result of your work and Jesse's memory. So thank you for all you're doing so far, and thank you for sharing what you're about to share with our listeners here on this first weekend of February. It's been a busy year for you. There's a new book that I think was either in the process or just poised for or had been released the last time we talked. Let's quickly remind folks about that and why they should consider reading it.
Thank you so much for having me on again, John. I can't believe that it's been a decade, but we've accomplished a lot. And, you know, as you know, and maybe your listeners don't know, I decided to focus on the focus on love, a thing that connects us all as human beings. We're stronger together. Almost all the research that's come out focused on why we're seeing the escalating issues that we are. And I'm talking about violence and mental illness and substance abuse and more, is really boils down to lack of connection, love, and belonging, and having the essential life skills necessary to face difficulty and pain in our lives and be able to learn from it, grow through it, and be strengthened by it. And literally, that's why we're here as human beings, and we're all the same in this want and need to love and be loved. But also, we all feel pain. We know our kids are going to go through difficult times, so we are responsible for fortifying them with what they need to be able to take that pain and grow from it. It's called post-traumatic growth. It's what the Choose Love movement focuses on and all our free programming focuses on, and what I've been focusing my life on really for the last 10 years. So I'm excited to share it with your audience. And the Choose Love Awareness Month is really kind of to draw attention to these essential life skills that are universal. You talked about the children's book that I just released. It's my fourth book. It's called Choosing Love, A Pathway to Flourishing. And it's a different kind of children's book because it is for everyone. These universal lessons, every page has a beautiful original watercolor that corresponds with the lesson that's being taught. And the interesting thing is, it may be a new lesson for someone that's younger, but it is a reminder and a reinforcement for parents and grandparents and caregivers and whoever else is reading it with them, because these are all the universal life skills that we need to be able to be the best version of ourselves and put our best foot forward and literally thoughtfully respond with love to anything that comes along in our lives. And so that's what this book is about, and I'm really excited about it. I think it's probably one of a kind, which is what a lot of what Choose Love has is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we became acquainted when you began this journey out of your grief 10 years ago, and it really seems to have grown exponentially. Every year that we've talked over the course of this, and even in the years where we haven't had a chance to visit, it seems like you're not to quote the now famous movie, but everywhere all the time. And certainly your message and your efforts are resonating with community leaders, folks in their own home, and especially educators and students all around the world.
I have literally been around the world multiple times. I'm constantly traveling and spreading Jesse's chalkboard message. I mean, this is a message that Jesse left on our kitchen chalkboard shortly before he was murdered in his first grade classroom. He wrote three words: nurturing, healing, love. And I saw those words and I realized that I wanted to be for something for the rest of my life, not fight against it. And I wanted to be for the most powerful unifying element that there is, and that's love. And so it's amazing to me that 10 years later, and this is by word of mouth and referral only, we're in over 10,000 schools and 120 countries because we are spreading this really empowering concept that we can choose love when we have some essential life skills. And it's really a beautiful way to live life. I've learned to choose love. I've learned these essential life skills. I did not have them before Jesse's murder. I have learned them through this free program that we have that's Lifespan on our website. And I have to tell you that my life is exponentially better. I still grieve Jesse. I miss him, but I have definitely grown through the experience, and everyone has the capacity to grow through anything that they're going through in their life.
Well, throughout February, Choose Love Awareness Month, you and countless others are going to be celebrating love in action, focusing on the Choose Love formula: courage, gratitude, forgiveness, and compassion in action. It seems so simple, but we, as you kind of oriented us on in previous interviews, each of these individual pillars are something we might be able to express at individual times. But when you put it all together, it really is an unbeatable formula that is making changes, positive changes, in communities and in neighborhoods where many parents in your same situation may have felt hopeless beforehand.
It is, you're exactly right. It's amazing that how powerful this formula is in every situation, circumstance, and interaction that you can possibly face, how people have taken the formula and run with it. I'm going to the second graduation in the Department of Corrections in New Hampshire. So we have a prison program now. We have a foster care program. We have a comfort dog program. I mean, it's incredible how it's expanding. And, you know, it's interesting. And the formula is neuroscientifically accurate. So really, you have to have courage first to face difficulty in your life instead of resisting, avoiding, or maybe even numbing yourself. You can strengthen yourself with gratitude. Gratitude can help you shift the focus of your lens. If you're having negative thoughts, you can't focus on two thoughts at once. So you can literally use gratitude, and we all have something to be grateful for, to shift the focus of your lens. And then forgiveness is so important. Decades of research say that forgiveness is the number one way to have healthy relationships. And Harvard University's Grant study, which is the longest ever study on human life, says that healthy relationships are the key to happiness. And then compassion in action is when we have the courage to step outside our busyness and distraction, even our own pain and suffering, to help someone else. Because when we do that, we help and heal ourselves. And that is literally choosing love. I've seen it used in every setting, even corporate settings, with incredible results. And this month, this Choose Love Awareness Month, is really a month where we can come together, because we're stronger together, to celebrate, but also to be part of the solution by addressing the root cause of the suffering that is leading to so much of the dysfunction that we're seeing in our society today. This is addressing the root cause, and that can enable us to literally reduce and prevent the suffering before it leads to all of what we're seeing today. So everybody can do it. And, you know, the anxiety that is now a super, super, super pandemic, the opposite of anxiety is positive action. So this gives us positive action that we can focus on, especially this month, but every day going forward.
It's also an opportunity to introduce concepts in schools and school systems that may have not embraced the Choose Love movement yet to fast track a solution to everything from disrespect and violence toward teachers to rowdiness and classroom disruptions and student misconduct, and to enhance both the social emotional development of children and to help mitigate these problems, which provide a more rich social and learning opportunity for every student within that school environment.
That's exactly right. Hey, you need to be a volunteer, John. You've heard me talk.
Oh, you know, I'm a volunteer.
I love that.
If you've got a volunteer cause, I'm your guy. Yeah. But no, it's honestly, well, you know, when you interview someone so many times as we have, you know, it can't help but rub off a little bit. But where I talk the talk, you certainly walk the walk. And part of that is even helping kids who may only be able to express themselves in creative ways, an opportunity this month with this Love in Action art contest. Let's hear about that.
Yeah, this is really, really exciting, and it's for all ages. And we know how important it is to create in our lives. I mean, really, we're either creating or we're reacting. And so we really want to get all of our creation on in all of our kids, and using, you know, all sorts of different modalities for art, whatever your mind can create. And there's going to be some great fun and sharing and prizes. We're going to get the kids together. We're going to get the educators together. I'm an artist, so I am really interested in seeing what the kids come up with. It's incredible, the creativity around Choose Love and how schools across the country have incorporated our logo and our colors and our messaging into theirs. Schools have had so many competitions with stickers and designs, and it's really been incredible for us to see. So we're just kind of going along with what schools have already dreamed up and their students to help bring everyone together to share. This is a month of having all of our 10,000 schools all over the world come together to see what everyone else is doing, to share the Choose Love message, and to really understand that there is a community in love. This is the Choose Love movement. I created it for a reason. It is a place where everyone can come together, regardless of any real or perceived differences in thought or anyhow, anywhere else. Mm. We can all come together in the want and need to love and be loved. And I really want this month to be a space for kids to truly not only understand that concept and know that there's a place there, but also to feel it and feel the power in unifying with other kids around the planet, focusing on love.
Well, we started off our Choose Love Awareness Month chat with you, Scarlett Lewis, talking about your latest children's book. We can wrap it up talking about a fundraiser that's kind of tied to a brand new calendar initiative that, as you explained before we hit the record button, is being adopted and celebrated by students and school administrators and all the participants in the Choose Love movement who are accessing it.
Well, actually, one of our most popular resources is our calendar. So every month, we release a calendar, and if you're registered for the Choose Love movement, you get this in your daily dose of love, which is a daily email that inspires and motivates and shares stories of how schools, homes, and communities are choosing love across the globe. And the calendar is located in there, and we have administrators using it in morning meetings. We have educators that are using it every single day. There's a positive action that you can take that reminds you and focuses you on choosing love. It reminds you that your power as a human being is in your ability to choose any moment, and it gives us positive actions to focus on. And we've known since the time of the philosophers to right now the latest cutting edge neuroscience that the opposite of anxiety is positive action. So these are daily reminders on positive actions that we can take. And these calendars were so popular that we did a year of calendars in advance, and we put it into a 2023 calendar. So there are hundreds of positive actions that you can take and reminders and reinforcements. It is just an incredible resource. And so we put this together. We are selling it as a fundraiser. You get a year of calendars in advance, but we also offer, you know, individual calendars on our website and through our emails and monthly and daily. So there's lots of ways to get this, but I just encourage everyone to join the movement. I know everybody wants to be part of the solution. I think there's a lot of reticence in how we can do that. Sometimes we just write checks, but we don't really know where the checks go to or what they're doing with it. So we don't get the benefit of seeing the outcome. And in the Choose Love movement, you can join, you can take the pledge, and you can start right away doing positive things in your life that are going to ripple out, and they're going to help create the world that we all want to live in.
Well, anyone who wants to experience or promote the nurturing, healing love that the late Jesse Lewis wished for and promoted prior to us losing him in the Sandy Hook tragedy can learn how to do that. You can become part of the Choose Love movement here during Choose Love Awareness Month or anytime. And it all starts just going to ChooseLoveMovement.org. Jesse's mom, Scarlett Lewis, a wonderful resource here to the award-winning For the People and to folks and prisons and school systems and communities and workplaces around the world. Scarlett, once again, thank you so much for the work that you're doing, and best of luck for the rest of this Choose Love Month. Thanks for being part of the show today.
Thank you so much, John.
Well, I've been getting emails from this organization for some time. I think we may have had an opportunity to have them on our program at one point back around 2009, 2010, and it has just been way too long to circle back with the folks from Bike Walk Connecticut. They're changing the culture of transportation through advocacy and education to make bicycling and walking safe, feasible, and attractive for a healthier, cleaner Connecticut. And we've got the right guy at the right time. I'm so pleased to meet Bruce Donald. He is repping for Bike Walk Connecticut today. And we're also going to be visiting with him again in a little over a month to talk about his work at the East Coast Greenway Alliance. So the first of a doubleheader with Bruce Donald this morning. And a really, really busy time, Bruce, because we're starting to see a lot of headlines, a lot of emails are flying around about the pros and cons of a couple of important pieces of legislation that are right in front of our state lawmakers right now in Hartford, one of which I guess you've already gone to testify on, and another one that you are going to be participating in tomorrow as we play this program on Sunday, right? You're coming back to Hartford on Monday or Tuesday for another round?
Oh, yes. Yeah. This is the time of year. It is legislative time. And, you know, we're pleased that we've had some sponsors of bills in the Environment Committee and the Transportation Committee that are really good for the state.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're hearing some pockets of opposition to a proposal to, I guess, in some situations, take small segments of private property to create contiguous bicycle-friendly road edging for enhancing the safety of cyclists and walkers, and to get more communities into this kind of synergy of providing alternate transportation avenues.
Yeah, so this came about because an abutting landowner of the proposed trail, the Farmington Canal Heritage Trail, in fact, in Southington, was just not pleased with the DOT process of designing the trail next to their business, and in fact, filed a suit against the state. And ordinarily, that wouldn't be a tremendous issue, except that in the process of that wending its way through the court system, the Attorney General of Connecticut took a look at the legislative package that exists for Connecticut DOT to acquire land through right-of-way acquisitions. And by the way, that does include eminent domain from time to time, although that really is pretty rare. Mm-hmm. This is really much more, the ability for DOT to buy slivers of land that can be used as right-of-ways or offsets or, whatever it is.
Through negotiations with the private owners.
Absolutely, yeah. So what happened was the Attorney General's office took a look at the enabling legislation and decided that it didn't actually call out as a line item bike trails and trails, literally, multi-use trails and greenways. And so that's what's going on. It's not like DOT hadn't been doing this before. They've been doing this for decades.
This is just for a progressive, and maybe even using that word gets people upset, but for a progressive and public facing purpose that is, as we kind of pointed out in the intro, going to help both in terms of transportation, health, and the environment.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think anyone on either side of the aisle, or anywhere else for that matter, thinks that multi-use trails and other types of trails as well throughout our state aren't good for the communities they go through. I mean, that's been proven. I don't think there's anybody that literally that is speaking against them. You do see some folks occasionally when these projects come up as new projects in new communities that want more information. They want to know how they work and what they are, and is there crime? And the answer is not particularly, almost never. Are miscreants going to come and steal my television? No, they're not. It just doesn't happen.
They're just it's just so awkward to balance one of those 60-inch behemoths while you're on a bike.
There's a famous picture. Yeah, it's like 10 years old, maybe, or more, of actually somebody who tried to move a television with one of those bike carriers.
Yeah, and
it doesn't work. Yeah.
So what's on the agenda for this coming week? What is the other piece of legislation that you're invested in here?
Well, this Monday, this week, we did HB 6482. That is an act authorizing bonding for bikeways, greenways, and recreational trails. I should talk about that briefly because this was raised by the Environment Committee, which traditionally does raise it. And what it does is it funds the Connecticut Recreational Trails Grant Program, which is run through the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. This is interesting because this is the only grant program in the state that basically provides grants for feasibility and design for trails, education, and a whole bunch of other things that the federal programs run through DOT tends to not fund.
Mm-hmm.
So this has been a really, really popular program. I am, among other things, the chairman of the Connecticut Greenways Council. There are two legislatively appointed bodies in the state that do work on bicycle and pedestrian activity. That's one of them. The other one is the Bike Ped Advisory Board. And I am the chairman of this particular one, which is captive of the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. So we vet all of the applications for this program, rank them, and send our findings to the commissioner of DEEP, and they award the money.
Yep.
So this year, that program, which was funded last year, those applications are due March 1st. And this bill that we're talking about here would allow the grant process to go forward in 2024.
Oh, okay. Very good.
So excellent program. I wanted everyone to know about it. And then, of course, what we were just talking about, the right-of-way acquisition is only a tiny part of the HB 5917. So, by the way, your listeners should know that when you go on the Connecticut legislative website, if you click in the actual bill number itself, it'll give you everything on it.
Yeah, including like an explainer or references to an explainer,
executive
summary. It's not like you're reading all kinds of legalese that's stitched into like a long bill.
Oh, yeah. No, it's great. These things are dozens and dozens of pages long,
yeah.
And your eyes go crazy.
Yeah,
after
you get
a
nice little digested encapsulation,
yes.
And then folks can speak in favor or against with their local lawmakers and hopefully get the show on the road. Yeah.
And in fact, you can go in and look at testimony that's been submitted already, which is important because you can take a look and see what people are saying.
Yeah.
It's a good system. And it's funny because it used to be that this was all in person at the State House in Hartford.
Yeah.
And it's now virtual. Well, it's virtual and in person now.
Yeah, you can testify from your, Barker Lounger there.
Absolutely, yeah. Which is why I think this is so fantastic. The public can be much more involved than it used to be.
Yeah, That's great. So, well, we hope they will follow your lead and check it out and come to bat for folks who are seeking expanded opportunities to bike and walk safely in Connecticut, and bring with those activities all of the positive environmental and health benefits that come with it. Bruce Donald is with us on this segment. He's representing Bike Walk Connecticut. BikeWalkCT.org is their website. If you'd like to check them out and figure out what they're doing in or around your neighborhood and maybe get involved, we'll be talking to him again in a little over a month regarding his other work with the East Coast Greenway Alliance. But right now we're going to take a real quick break. Bruce, stick with us, folks. We got a lot more to talk about in terms of biking and walking. Do you own a bike, or are you ready to buy one? You made that New Year's resolution to get healthier. Why not have fun doing it? Getting out on a bike, or just lacing on your walking shoes and taking advantage of some of the great locations that Bike Walk Connecticut has already made an impression. We'll talk more with Bruce Donald. Stick with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Well, you've heard about them plenty on the award-winning For the People, and now you can join runners and walkers for the 16th annual IRIS Run for Refugees, Sunday, February 12th at 10 a.m. With the run limited to 2,000 participants, it's expected to sell out prior to race day, so anyone interested is encouraged to register early. Run for Refugees has become a Super Bowl Sunday destination event with a mission. The Run for Refugees, New England's most international road race, offers a great chance to honor America's oldest, most noble tradition of welcoming the newcomer while getting a healthy, inspiring run or walk with the community. The event raises funds and awareness to help refugees, immigrants, and other displaced persons establish new lives, regain hope, and contribute to the vitality of Connecticut's communities. For more information on the run, visit runforrefugees.org. Or for more information about IRIS, just go to irisct.org. That's IRISCT.org. Well, we're back with Bruce Donald, and he's repping for Bike Walk Connecticut, changing the culture of transportation here in Connecticut, as you heard in the earlier segment, through advocacy in Hartford and education. It's what Bike Walk Connecticut does best. BikeWalkCT.org is their website. And it's interesting, Bruce. I was kind of had some construction on Route 8, and as I was coming back from the Naugatuck Valley into Waterbury the other day. And I'll tell you, since I worked in the Valley as a journalist almost 30 years ago, I remember the ideas about starting a greenway along the Naugatuck River that would link essentially Long Island Sound all the way up to perhaps Waterbury, or even Thomaston, Torrington, maybe border to border or border to coast. And it's great to see how many segments of that greenway are coming together. But I get off the highway and I'm kind of going through a back road where Waterbury has been developing a little bit of a greenway trail, and there's the big huge bicycle decals right in the middle of the newly paved and painted road, and I was pleased to see that it's not just a little pathway on the edge of the road that's designated to the bikes. It's actually this entire side street along the Naugatuck River.
Yeah, you know, you bring up a good point, which is paint and signs, which is the classic panacea for a municipality, really don't cut it anymore. You know, we need protected, physically separated bike infrastructure that protects people, quite frankly. It's a safety issue.
Mm-hmm.
And we've been pushing for that for ages and ages, and we're starting to see some real movement. What you saw there is a classic example of a side path,
mm-hmm.
that's so-called by the planners, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're absolutely fantastic because they get you somewhere quickly, and they connect point to point places where you need to go. So your school, your work, shopping, you know, you name it. And then what are also called by planners multimodal connections. So that would be to the bus, to the railroad,
To the ferry.
And you know, this is a big deal for mobility for people.
Sure. And a great alternative. I've had a dear friend for, again, all these almost 30 years, who's an avid cyclist who, you know, lives in Wethersfield, bikes to his business in Hartford when he can, 12 months a year. You know, he's had a number of close calls, and it's terrifying to think about the implications. But when you think of the ability to be able to commute to work by bike in a kind of a thick, congested area like the Wethersfield-Hartford corridor, that's really cool.
Yeah, no, those connections are going to, I think, become critical. And, you know, one of the components of this, which is not lost on a lot of people, is, you know, if you're on your bike going somewhere, it's a one-to-one diminution of a car ride, of a fossil fuel event, right?
Right.
And so, you know, you may not be, you know, individually saving the environment, but I'll tell you, it's a big deal if you get a lot of people doing it.
Sure. Sure, and if you're and if a one rider, one cycle situation is not for you, you can always go to a few of the municipalities here in Connecticut that'll put 10 or 12 or 14 of you on a big contraption with a bar in the middle.
Sure.
And you can pedal your way around and enjoy your beverage. I don't want all our time to go, because we do need to remind folks of how Bike Walk Connecticut is working with schools and on DMV licensing. Let's talk about the coordination with the Department of Motor Vehicles. What's that all about?
Well, periodically, we've been able to get in front of DMV to update the driver's manual, and it hasn't been updated since 2019. Part of the issue with that is that the General Assembly has been passing public laws for bicyclists and pedestrians for a long time now. A lot of this has to do, as I'm sure you're aware, because we all see it in the news, of the horrible amount of deaths.
Yes.
For mostly pedestrians, but also some bicyclists as well.
Yep.
And I believe it was 76 last year in Connecticut, which is just a incredible number.
Yeah.
So the obvious place, when you think about it, for getting the public to understand pedestrian and bicycle safety is, in fact, when you're licensing people to get a driver's license.
Mm-hmm.
It does make sense, right?
It's probably the last best beachhead to impressing upon motor vehicle operators the need to, you know, share the road, which will also have some benefit to motorcyclists as well.
Well, absolutely. You know, and there's a couple of things that have come up that have been passed into law just in the last couple of years, one of which is the crosswalk law. So now that you step within a crosswalk, people actually have to stop. That was not the law just a couple of years ago.
Right.
Then there's the 3-foot passing rule, which a lot of people don't know about. You have to give a bicyclist 3 feet. And in doing so, you are now allowed to go over a double yellow line, which I think a lot of people don't know. So there's a lot of stuff that exists out there for the benefit of walkers and bikers that hasn't
caught up to the teaching material.
No, it's just, I mean, and there's some police departments that don't know about some of this stuff. And that's part of what we try to do, you know. So one of the things we're going to get back doing, and we used to do it, is we're going to start doing more educational materials again on a lot of these issues. And I'm looking forward to, you know, we're already starting to draft some of that.
So in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Bruce, just let folks know how they can get involved in any activities that you have that might be coming up anytime after the 5th of February when we broadcast.
So obviously, we're always looking for new members. That's easy. You can just go on the website. Also, volunteers, and we've got a number of events that you can volunteer to help with. We're also looking for some new directors as well. So if you're interested in actually spending some time with us, we'd love to have you. And that's all, again, on the website. We've got a variety of events. In fact, this Sunday, we've got a debriefing by Zoom on something called The Street Project, which is a documentary by Jennifer Boyd of West Hartford.
Yep, and that's going to be later today as we broadcast
Oh,
the
fantastic.
Program.
Yep, oh, good, yep, good, good.
Yep, so folks,
That's
a top item when you go to bikewalkct.org. So folks who may be listening to this live on the radio and are inclined and have time to get to it can do that. We've pretty much hit the end of our time block here, Bruce. So I'm really glad we're going to be circling back probably the third Sunday of March to talk a little bit more about your work with the East Coast Greenway Alliance that really kind of overlays this important work that you and your whole team at Bike Walk Connecticut is doing, and I really appreciate you taking some time to get us oriented to that. Folks, if you have a bike or want to acquire a bike, or you just want a safer, better variety of opportunities to walk in your community, Bike Walk Connecticut is the organization you need to know and become a member of. They've been around since 2006. BikeWalkCT.org is their website. Let's create a Connecticut that's more bicycle and pedestrian friendly with the help of our guest this morning, Bruce Donald. Thank you, Bruce, for your time today. Well, you can actually get to know our guest this morning if you go to the website for Connecticut Housing Partners, cthousingpartners.org. I'm talking to Renee Dobos a little under a year ago. She was actually named one of the country's top women CEOs from an organization called USA9s, which is pretty exciting, but not as exciting and important as the work that she and her team are doing at Connecticut Housing Partners. This nonprofit has been working for over three decades to strengthen communities by providing affordable housing and services to enhance the quality of life for low and moderate income families in Connecticut. And Renee, I've got to say, from everything that's going on last year and especially this year in the Connecticut legislature in regards to expanding opportunities for housing and things that are going on in the ground and communities like Woodbridge and others across the greater New Haven area, you are really in the thick of it, and what an incredible time it is to be a housing advocate, especially for folks who so horribly need it here, and folks who are staffing and working for our businesses, and folks who are feeding the economies of our communities. A lot of folks, when they hear about creating good housing situations, that is a disconnect, unfortunately, and I would bet you agree.
Yes, I do agree, and thank you for having me.
So let's hear a little bit more quickly about your agency. Three decades and plus at work on behalf of this cause. Over that span of time, let's just get a little bit of an idea of the success stories that you've been able to affect.
Sure. So we are a nonprofit organization, and our mission is to strengthen communities by providing affordable housing and services to enhance the quality of life for low and moderate income families in Connecticut. And by doing this, we're actually addressing housing insecurity, housing income inequality, we're preventing homelessness, and we're creating and preserving safe, affordable housing and resident services for the people that we serve. I like to often say to people, when we're talking about bringing families out of the shelters, we're really pulling children and their families out of the shelters, because it's so important for children to have a stable, safe home environment. They thrive in school when they feel safe and it's a secure housing environment. Their health improves, as well as the family health improves, and they just become more confident people.
Yeah, this is really just the bedrock of everything that springs from the issues of social and racial equity.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So we talk a lot about the issues about housing. What are a few of the challenges that you and your team are facing right now here in Connecticut?
Well, I'll be honest, we can't build it fast enough. We do rely heavily on federal and state funding as well as tax credits. We're very fortunate in this point in time that we have a very supportive governor and commissioner of housing. So they have really been striving and working hard to provide us the resources so that not only can we build additional housing, but also preserve housing stock that we already have, which is really important. And by that preservation, we just did a $13 million rehabilitation on an asset in Bridgeport, Connecticut. It has 32 units, and it had been about 20 years since there was a last major rehab. And by going through that process, we're not only able to improve the rooms, such as kitchens and bathrooms, but then we added amenities that they didn't have before, such as something as basic as a dishwasher and central air in the unit, which just makes the housing more comfortable and useful and energy efficient, which is really important. That's another bedrock that we're really focused on is energy efficiency, and we are working towards Energy Star in all categories, and we're also researching solar right now.
And to the credit of you and your team, I mean, really, when affordable housing was being talked about, it was typically being talked about in urban or near suburban areas. And now, especially over the past few years, we're hearing about the proliferation or the embracing of affordable housing and housing development for low and medium income individuals in a lot more of Connecticut's smaller communities. I mean, you know, from Winsted up in the Litchfield County all the way across to the Quiet Corner. And it's really wonderful to see across our 169 towns and cities that sometimes it's some of the smaller towns that are really leading by example.
I would concur with that, because I think planning departments in many of the municipalities are really recognizing that if they don't provide affordable housing, it impacts their entire community. So, for instance, if you have seniors who can't afford their home anymore and there isn't any affordable housing in the community, they're forced to leave the community. And you know, they're a vibrant part of our environment. And it's important that, you know, seniors want to be close to their families. You know, with moving families into areas that possibly they would never have moved into, we're deconcentrating low-income households and spreading them into other areas so that they have more opportunities for their children. They may work in your community, and that way they're closer to their home and as well as their work environment. And, you know, there is this feeling that sometimes low-income people bring other problems to the community, but that is really not the case. They really become a fabric of the community, and economically they're improving the community because they're shopping in the community, they're participating in the community, and it just makes for a very diverse environment. And diversity is key for all of us to live together and to be able to learn and enhance each other's lives.
Yeah, and I'm not speaking for myself. I'm speaking on behalf of a number of guests that we've had on For the People that, you know, in fact, the relocation of affordable housing into neighborhoods often increases property values. It enhances. And as you pointed out, especially with seniors, when people say, you know, if I don't have affordable housing, you know, it's not going to affect my taxes. It's not going to bring kids into the school system. You know, what's in it for me? And you so aptly pointed out that if seniors need to be relocated out of the community that they spent 50, 60, 70 years in to a strange community. It could impact their physical health, which means that they might require a lot more taxpayer support if they get sick or need to depend on care because their health is deteriorated because they've been moved out of their own community. It's a vicious circle, and this work you're doing is so important and it has so many ripple effects.
Yes, it's true. And there are national statistics that are indicating that people the age of 55 and older is becoming the largest growing homeless population in our communities. And so that's another reason why we really need to focus on that and make sure that there's housing for all and not just for homeowners or other people that a municipality may feel is desirable. There is another statistic that a lot of times some municipalities oppose affordable housing because the claim is that there's too many children being brought into the school system, where in fact it isn't affordable housing that's bringing in the children into the school system. It's single family homeowners. That's the big population that's going into the school system. So, you know, there's lots of arguments that people try to make about why they don't want affordable housing in their communities, but statistically there really isn't any merit to any of the issues being raised.
You know, like so many things that kind of live on social networks, you know, concepts that are promoted and yet so wrong. In the last few minutes that we have for this part of our conversation, Renee, and folks, if you're listening, we're going to be wrapping up the first of our two-part interview with Renee Dobos from Connecticut Housing Partners. CTHousingPartners.org is their website if you'd like to learn more about them before we pick things up next week. But Renee, you know, it seems like 2023 at the State House in Hartford is going to be the year a lot of good things are going to happen for you and your team and your constituents, because I think more than ever, Connecticut's State House is populated with individuals who look like our communities. You have so many more people who have probably been in disadvantaged low and middle income situations growing up that they are now advocates for the cause.
Yes, I do believe that is true. And also, our organization is a chartered member of NeighborWorks, which is a congressionally funded organization where we not only receive some financial support, but we provide, all of us that are members, there's 240 of us across the country, but every quarter we're providing data to NeighborWorks where they're collating this data, and it's brought forth in front of Congress. And then every spring we go to the Hill, all of us as a group, and we lobby at the Hill level. And so I also try to lobby locally here at the state level so that I can always keep at the forefront the importance of affordable housing and how important having access to funding is to be able to make sure that we can continue with the important work.
Well, that's a great place to leave the conversation for this week, Renee. And folks, as we wrap up our program this morning, we remind you that we will be back with the first segment of next week's program to pick up the conversation with Renee Dobos. She's CEO of Connecticut Housing Partners, who are working to end housing insecurity, address income inequality, and prevent homelessness by creating and preserving safe, affordable housing and resident services for the people they serve across Connecticut. CT Housing Partners is their website. Tune in again next week to hear the balance of our conversation with Renee Dobos. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone.
Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.